Thank you, everybody, and good morning. Well, thank you for coming to my talk, From Simulation to Tenant Takeover. All I wanted was for Microsoft to deliver my phishing simulation, but instead I kept reeling in bug bounties and admin access to random tenants instead. A little bit about me. I learned hacking when I was about 8 years old. I remember vividly traveling with a family member to the beach, and they parked at a very expensive parking spot, noticed that the car in front already had a parking fine, took that fine, put it under their own windscreen wiper, and told me, now I don't have to pay, because they think I already have a fine. That's when I realized, if you move objects creatively around in the world, then processes work a little differently, and they might do things differently in your favor. So, when I was 14, I was doing what every other sensible 14-year-old was doing. I was spraying around remote code execution exploits to random IP addresses on the internet. Anybody remember this SSHD exploit from 1998, I remember, if I remember it correctly? It got you a root shell at Red Hat Enterprise, the version that was distributed on CD-ROM. Nobody updated that. Then I realized that this was not a very future-proof career path, and I chose to study artificial intelligence and astrophysics, but quickly realized I would not find any intelligent life, not among the stars and not in my video card. So I switched back to cybersecurity, did some pen testing and red teaming for a government agency responsible for keeping the vital sector and the ministries in the Netherlands safe. And then in 2020, I co-founded the company iSecurity, where I am now a principal cybersecurity specialist, and helped the company grow from 5 to around 150 people in 4 years' time, with now offices also in Düsseldorf and Berlin. It was at this company that this story unfolded. This is the story of what happens when an old hacker wants to automate delivering a phishing simulation. We'll start with looking at a phishing simulation platform built by Microsoft, Microsoft's attack simulation training. Spoiler alert, that was not the platform we were going to use. Then I ran into some challenges because I needed to allow list my own phishing platform at the places where I wanted my phishing simulations delivered. This caused me ending up at a Chinese company called Shanghai Wickersoft Co., dot limited, dot. More on that later. And then it ended with me hijacking some remote PowerShell sessions, but I'll get to that. First, Microsoft platform. It's called Attack Simulation Training, and I looked into this, if this was a suitable product to use for phishing simulations. I think Microsoft saw this report as well. They understood that not only the amount of phishing was increasing rapidly, but also the market for phishing simulation was projected to grow rapidly. So they also wanted a piece of that cake and outsourced the development of some phishing simulation platform, integrated it a little too rapidly in their own services. It looks a bit like this. Attack simulation training. It looks like it was built exactly according to spec, but without much love put into it. It has all the functionality you would expect from a phishing simulation platform, sending out simulations in different categories, allowing people, your employees to train if they click too much, reporting for management, etc. First thing I did was to send myself one of these templates to see how it looked. And the first one I sent looked like this. You might think, who is going to click on that? But we're past that. I know a lot of people will click on everything they get. The interesting thing was, this was in the category a malware attachment, so there was an attachment, and I think the system would recognize when people tried to open it, but there was also a link in there. And this link pointed to an Atlassian site, and I realized that it didn't exist. It was not registered. So, what would any sensible person do? Just register the Atlassian site. And I immediately started getting access requests to my Atlassian site. People really wanted that file. And I reported this to Microsoft, because, well, I now have a very lineup of people willing to click on everything. Imagine what you could do with that. And they awarded me a bug bounty of $3,000. I'll keep a counter there, because this is not the first one. Then I realized that this simulation was sent from a domain name that looked rather odd. Specifically, it was not registered. So, I registered it. And immediately I started getting replies from people feeling the need to reply to a phishing simulation. There were a lot of people that felt the need to reply that they were not going to click on anything. You ever felt that need? Please do not send me this file again. Then there were people, thanks for the spam, my friend. I'm not that easily fooled. Yeah, good job. And there were people who were, I think, on the verge of a burnout. Please stop doing this. Multiple vendors. Okay, Kenny, calm down. Then there were people who needed more explanation. Otherwise, they were not going to open this file. Okay, here's some more malware. Or, what's this? Is it not a scam? No, it's not a scam. Then there are people where you know they clicked. Good morning, I cannot view the file. Or, what is this, please? The file will not load up. Or, hi, sir, what is this file? Is it anything not important? So, I could have just reported this domain to Microsoft and probably got another 3,000 and then do that for all the other templates. But hey, I built a small scraper, scraped the backend API, got all the templates out there, and it turned out there were 101 unregistered domains. And 131 that were registered but not owned by Microsoft. So there probably were a lot of companies around that were receiving random replies and thought, where the hell is this coming from? And only 9 domains owned by Microsoft. I got another 3,000 bounty. You can imagine my trust in this product was gone. And then, a couple of months later, I realized I was still getting access requests on my Atlassian site. And they somehow put that template back. And I got another 3,000 bounty. So I built my own phishing simulation platform in GoFish, an open source platform. And then the next challenge arose, and that was getting my phishing simulations delivered. This meant allow listing my IP address and domain names at our clients. And we were responsible for that. So I looked up the manual, and it's quite easy in Exchange Online. I wanted to automate this. Well, they have a PowerShell commandlet for that. So I built this in PowerShell. You just have to do a couple of small things, like create a connection filtering policy, create a bypass clutter transport rule, create a forefront anti-spam report transport rule, create a safe skip safe links processing transport rule, create a safe skip safe attachment processing transport rule, and create an inbound collector. You would think that if you do all this, you would have allow listed your IP address and domain name, and your phishing simulation will be delivered. Wrong. Microsoft wants to keep their customers secure by default, so they created an override on these overrides called, well, if it's high confidence phishing, yeah, Microsoft was a little too good in recognizing my phishing simulations, so they thought it was high confidence phishing, then all the previous things will not work. But luckily, they created an override for the override on my overrides, which was called advanced delivery. Yeah, that took a while to find. There is a setting for phishing simulations specifically, and this setting allows for a complete bypass of certain IP addresses and domain names. The only thing was, it was not using Exchange Online PowerShell, it was using Security and Compliance PowerShell, a somehow completely different PowerShell environment. And the manual said, if you are using this in customer environments, and we were, because we are a cloud solution provider, using a GDAP link, more on that later, well, it's quite simple. You use the commandlet connect IPPS session with some parameters, very specifically an Azure AD authorization endpoint URI, which looked rather odd. That's not an Azure AD authorization endpoint, right? I tried my things that I thought were a correct authorization endpoint, and everything that I did created unreadable PowerShell errors. So I thought, let's do the sensible thing and send a support ticket to Microsoft. Yep. My support ticket got a reply from Microsoft support. This was legitimate. But in the CC were two people from a company called Shanghai Wickersoft Co., dot Limited. Dot. And I got a telephone call from a number in China, plus 86, with somebody who I could definitely not understand what he was saying. It turns out this company is a legitimate company co-founded by Microsoft and a local municipality in China in 2002, and has 10,000 professionals working there for support of Microsoft clients. Okay. This company was now called Wickersoft. It used to be called Wickresend. And I really like the fact that they used the same Italica Helvetica font for their logo as Microsoft did in the 90s. And they were definitely using a script and asked me to send Fiddler logs. Fiddler is a HTTPS interceptor that will intercept all traffic to the endpoint. So this meant that they specifically requested for any HTTPS packet containing my access tokens. I did not feel comfortable sending my access tokens to a Chinese company. Would any of you do that? I don't see any hands. This is not a political talk, so I leave this at this, but this is rather fishy, right? I manually redacted my packets before sending them, because otherwise my ticket would be on hold forever. And they replied, oh, sorry, this is not possible. There will be a replacement API, but there's no ETA. Please keep working via the portal. Sorry for this temporary disturbance. But I had a lot of clients where I needed to allow list my IP addresses, and I was not going to click through all them. Would probably have been a lot faster than this. But hey, I was committed. So I thought, if it is possible to do this in a portal, it is possible to automate it. So I looked at, what does the portal do when I click on this setting and when I implement this setting and put an IP address there and a domain name of my phishing simulation platform? And well, clicking through this, I realized that requests were going to the security center, which hosts an API proxy. In the reply, I would get the real host name that was serving my request containing the backend API. This was somehow regionally distributed, so this was talking to the EUR06B region, which probably stands for Europe. And on this OData API, well, you could use these endpoints called PhishSim Override Policy and PhishSim Override Management Rule. This region, you could get that because if you use that PowerShell commandlet connect IPPS session, it would give you a warning telling you the region where your specific tenant lives. So for example, the Microsoft.com tenant lives in the NAM06B region, probably North America. Then you would need an access token for this backend API. I had a look at the access token that was sent through the API proxy, realized this was for the resource without the region, so ps.compliance.protection.outlook.com. Then you'd need to have a valid client ID. Well, I reused a Microsoft Enterprise application that already has the right API permissions for that. And the redirect URI, which was some guesswork, but often localhost works, because it has to be defined in the Microsoft tenant as a valid redirect URI. And then with a little bit ancient library in PowerShell, the Azure AD authentication library, you could then get a token for this resource and client ID. And with that token, I can now talk to the backend API and access all these API endpoints related to the phishing simulation override policy and rule. Now you can also use Rode tools if you want to do this in Python by Dirk-Jan Mollema, very nice tool. So send a request. Got a reply. It even tells you all the metadata of the API and all available endpoints. Very nice if you want to black box test what this API does. But I could now simply replay the requests that the portal was sending, automate that. And that looked a bit like this. So for every tenant I wanted to update the settings, I need to get that region, then acquire an access token, then get if there is already a policy, if not created, if there is already a rule, or if not created, and then you can update the settings. Easy. I automated this in PowerShell, ran it, and first three tenants went successfully, and then suddenly at tenant four, I realized, hey, that's odd. It tells me the policy already exists and the rule already exists. That should not happen. I realized that it was the policy and rule that I just updated at tenant one. I had a look if my code was correct, if I was not accidentally using the wrong access token, but I really was using an access token for tenant four. I did not immediately thought anything of it, because my user account would have access to both tenants, but something felt odd, and I realized this is definitely crossing a security boundary, because this specific token should only give you access to tenant four, and not tenant one. I submitted a bug report to the MSRC, and immediately received 5,000 bounty. I thought, maybe there's something more there. They also told me it might take a while to fix, because it's a complex bug. But I still wanted to send out that phishing simulation. So I needed to automate those settings. And I was not going to click through this portal 100 times. So I thought, let's see how this API really works, because maybe there's a way around this bug. And I realized that when I was sending packets to this backend API, I would get a reply that was consistently trying to set a cookie value. And this cookie value was also set in a header called BE server, probably backend server. It looked like a host name. So my request was actually being handled by a backend server somewhere, which had a specific host name. I realized that if I would send my first request of the day, or in a specific time frame, it would take a couple of seconds before I get a reply. Any subsequent requests were much faster. So this value of this cookie also stayed the same. So it kept trying to set the cookie, even when I was not replying with the same cookie back. So there was somehow some sort of smart load balancer in front of this remote PowerShell session that realized I already had a session and connected me to the same backend server when I was sending requests. So I thought, if I just change that value with each subsequent request to another valid backend server, it would be handled by a different backend server. I would get a fresh PowerShell session, and I will be able to update those settings. So I added a couple of lines of code to set this cookie. I also mapped out all backend servers that replied. This turned out, for example, in the EUR 01B region to be 250 different backend servers. In the 06 region, there were 55, for example, etc. And it seemed to work. So for the first 49 tenants, I got success and my settings were updated. And then suddenly, at tenant 50, I get a response that there is a completely different policy and a different rule that I did not recognize. Luckily, I was running all this through a proxy, because I wanted to know what was going on. And I realized, this is not one of my customers. This is somebody I really don't know. I told Microsoft, they said, yeah, just write something to reproduce it consistently. I ran my script again, and it did not work. So how to do this consistently? I thought, well, if I just bombard all these backend servers with requests, maybe something sticks. So I wrote a multi-threaded Python script that in 5 minutes was able to send requests to 600 different backend servers. First ran it on a Sunday, no hits, and then on Monday morning, bingo, one of the first hits was already hijacking a session of somebody else. Now, you think, what could you do with such a hijacked PowerShell session? Well, this was, remember, a session in the security and compliance PowerShell environment. And this environment contains a couple of commandlets, mainly related to Purview. And Purview is what Microsoft used to call their compliance center. And what can you do in a compliance center? Well, they have e-discovery as a functionality. And e-discovery has a couple of things built in. For example, content search. How does content search work? Well, you can simply search for a keyword, say passport, or password, or star. And it will search for that content in Exchange, in OneDrive, in SharePoint, in Teams, or in your whole tenant. And what can it do with those search results? Well, you could export the results and download them to your local computer. So I got another 5,000 bounty, because now the severity suddenly was a little bit more. What now? 2024, they made it a lot easier. They completely removed the, this functionality from the security and compliance PowerShell, migrated it to the Exchange Online PowerShell environment, and it's now just a couple of lines of codes, because it's very easy to connect to Exchange Online of a tenant, and there are now commandlets that do this. And they work. I, along the way, ran into another vulnerability that I found quite odd. But Microsoft just called it a UI issue. I'd let you decide. So remember that I told you that we were using GDAP relationships with our customer. So GDAP is the predecessor of DAP, or DAP. GDAP exists now for 2 years. DAP was what was used before. With DAP, every cloud solution provider was global admin at all of their clients. So they created GDAP to be make it more granular and giving you the ability to choose the roles that you want to have, that your cloud solution provider wants to have, or your cloud solution provider can tell you, well, we only need these roles, so let's do a relationship where we only have those roles. 2 years ago, everybody needed to migrate from DAP to GDAP. And Microsoft released the GDAP bulk migration tool, some .NET executable with a lot of functionality that just ingested CSV files and automatically migrated all existing DAP relationships, because bigger MSPs might have thousands of relationships. It was this tool that talked to an undocumented API endpoint at some traffic manager site called Migrate. And this migration, it worked in two steps. It first talked to this API endpoint, to the Migrate endpoint, with the tenant ID of the CSP, the partner, and the tenant ID and tenant name of the customer. This would create a relationship. And then it would use the old DAP relationship to approve that new GDAP relationship. Of course, I was wondering what would happen if you enter a tenant ID where you don't have a DAP relationship with. And it would create a new GDAP relationship with the status approval pending, and then the approval would fail because there's no DAP relationship. I thought, this is odd. What is this GDAP status, actually? And it turns out there are a lot of different statuses possible, like activating, or active, or approval pending, or approved, or created, or expired. There's also unknown future value. And I realized there was also a Graph API endpoint to manage this GDAP relationships. And I might have sent a patch request to that endpoint with that relationship ID with a status of approved. And I got a 204 no content back. And the status was then, in a couple of seconds after that, first activating and then active. I thought, oh, so now I am global administrator at Microsoft. It turns out I wasn't. I wasn't able to log in using the normal method. But what did happen, or might have happened, was that Steve Ballmer would have seen that iSecurity was now global administrator in their tenant. I think he'd be happy because we have a lot of good developers. I submitted this to Microsoft. They said, well, this does not meet the bar for servicing. you're not able to do anything. It's only a UI issue. Well, if I would tell you to look in your admin panel and suddenly I am global admin in your environment, would you be worried? So, some takeaways. Early adopters of new cloud products can expect less mature products. Do not expect any cloud product to be perfect. Do not expect any cloud product like, oh, well, it's now their responsibility to keep it secure. Just use mature products, please. And yeah, consider that as a factor when you're exposing sensitive data to cloud products. If these kinds of vulnerabilities are discovered by adversaries, well, they can have disastrous consequences if their app used at scale. If I would be able to export the data of a random tenant every couple of minutes, imagine how many different companies I could extort. And for bug bounty hunters who want to earn some side money, just focus on edge cases of real usage of products that not many people use, and you'll have more success. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this very terrifying talk, I would say. I would imagine our audience might have a few questions. If so, please line up behind the microphones or reach out to our signal angels. I do not see anyone at the microphone yet, so I would like to ask you a question. Do you think that what you did could have been observed by others? Maybe by logging or something.
Yeah, a good question. So the login event took place at my own tenant. So there was a log entry in my tenant that I logged into my own tenant. There was no login event at the victim tenant. The logs were there because there was already a session by an administrator doing things, and those might have been logged, but I did not have access to that tenant. So I could not see if my hijacking the session would keep continuing creating logs or not, but it would be very hard to detect.
All right, thank you so much. Is there anyone else who has a question? There is a light from the signal angel. Please tell me your question.
Yes, so the internet wonders whether this is still unfixed. You said Microsoft were like, meh, not our problem.
A good question. All of these things are now fixed. The vulnerabilities in their text simulation platform were fixed, I think, already a year ago. The vulnerabilities in the security and compliance PowerShell were fixed a little less than a year ago. And this UI issue, I think, 8 months ago.
Microphone number two, please.
Hi, thanks for the talk. Just curious, are you still getting access requests to the documents?
My Atlassian account expired, but for the past half year when I was still using it after the last report, I was not getting any more access requests. But well, it's probably free for registration, so who's up to check?
Nice. Microphone number four.
Thanks for this very nice talk. You're almost impossible global administrator as Microsoft, given you might be able to log in as such. What would be the first thing to fix there for you?
The first thing to fix at Microsoft? Maybe I'll have a look at their pricing model first. That can be better.
All right, I don't see any further questions. If you come up with questions after the talk, please reach out to Vaisha. And other than that, please have another big applause for Vaisha.